This is a HeadGum Podcast.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy, Johnny G, standing 6'2", 300 and something pounds, hasn't weighed himself in a long time due to light depression. From the South Shore of Nassau County, Long Island, that probably explains the depression, it's John Gabris. All you gotta do is trust me. Jackson, Maine, I do trust you, but you're such a dated reference at this point. Abortion is healthcare. Okay, I see you've progressed in life. I like that. Also joining me in the High Mighty Studios, Manila Sound Coast, Arthur Gabris. Arthur, give him a shout out. Just kidding, Arthur sleeps 7 hours a day on the couch, snoring loud enough that I can hear him in the other room with headphones on. Also joining me in the High and Mighty Studios, not snoring, but making me entertained via writing for The Ringer, it's Alan Siegel.
Hello. I've been waiting to hear that live for a couple of years now, and it did not disappoint.
For the listeners, he came. He collapsed, and he clearly orgasmed. We've edited it out, but now we can rebuild ourselves and connect again like normal beings.
Yeah, you took out the bathroom break I needed, so that's great.
Right, thank you. Dude, thanks for – long time coming. We've been chatting for a long time, so I'm stoked to finally have you on. And it's rad the parallels we've had over the last year or so over Instant Messenger is what I almost called it, over the internet. So
with our generation, I think that fits. But I've been meaning to tell you this for a couple of years now, which is I think we grew up – pretty differently in a lot of ways, but I will say that there's nobody on any podcast I've ever listened to that their childhood just feels more familiar than you. And it really, really, every time you talk about your two brothers, I think of my own. I have two brothers. My mom had three boys in 4 years, which in Whoa. 2023 sounds absolutely insane, but she's a saint for sure.
Well, you guys are so close in age too. Where do you fall in this breakdown?
So I'm the oldest.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Most neglected. Yeah.
So it's so funny because I had weird perceptions of the birth order. Like my middle brother, who's 18 months younger than me, he was like the attention hog. And I always thought middle children were got the most attention, but then everyone sort of said, no, they're the ones who usually are forgotten. And then my youngest brother is 4 years younger than me.
Oh, that's rad. Yeah, I've talked about it before, but my middle brother is 2.5 years, and then my youngest brother is like 7 years or something like that. It's kind of like a weird breakdown. Wait, if I'm 41, he's like, yeah, it's like 6 or 7 years. I should just straight up know this by now as a professor. Maybe 1 minute of research before I come on the brothers episode of I&I.
Well, I figured this was like such in your blood or something that, yeah, you wouldn't really need. I mean, I wrote down a bunch of stuff because the stories are endless. Like if my friends listen to this, I'm a little afraid they'll know every fucking story that I tell. So it's,
I mean, if you listen to my podcast, you're going to know every story I tell. And listeners of this podcast are, luckily they all have goldfish brains. So every week it's a whole new fucking belief to them. Yeah.
Yeah. I've enjoyed my role as unofficial Action Boys and High and Mighty correspondent.
I appreciate you got the big shout out about we talked about you on the post Basic Instinct Shadow Wolves because you had the fucking inside scoop on the Bart Simpson keychain, which was like the amount of bullshit that Action Boys listeners send us. It was like you are literally on top of a mountain of garbage, but you are the king of this garbage mountain for that, because that was the most interesting and like relevant message I've ever received about the show.
Well, just to fill everybody in.
Yeah, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah, no. There's a scene in Basic Instinct where Gene Triplehorn's character has a Bart Simpson keychain, and I happen to be writing a book about The Simpsons. So I had interviewed Paul Verhoeven for something in the past, and I sent a note to his assistant asking about the Bart Simpson keychain, and I got a note back directly from Verhoeven, and he said, "It's really funny. I've never seen the show before. He's Dutch, so his prop master somehow just put that in." It's such a distinct image, like that, even if it means nothing.
Right. And it even stands out inside of the movie.
Like, it's like, it's not even funny, like, now with time has passed. It's like an unusual choice in the moment, and even funnier now with what Basic Instinct has become and Simpsons have become, sort of like, one's an institution, yeah. And the other is, like, legendary for a different reason.
Yeah, and it's so funny because you're right. It somehow sticks out like a sore thumb, despite the fact that Bart Simpson is like the most iconic image of the 90s. It's wild. But I don't know how that happened. But yeah.
Yeah, the movie seems to be devoid of pop culture in a way. So like, I think that slice in kind of like startles you a little bit. Big Verhoeven fan over here. Love all his shit, man. That's so rad that you got to interview him. And also pretty fucking cool that you're writing a Simpsons book. You said you wanted to wait until the show wraps to put it out, right? So you have about another 25 years on the typewriter.
Yeah, it's crazy because I am almost embarrassed. Like, I didn't, when I first saw like Starship Troopers, another Verhoeven classic, I had no idea it was a satire. I think I was probably 14 or 15. It was like, I didn't really get what made him great. I mean, of course, I love Total Recall, but...
I love Total Recall and Starship Troopers for all the wrong reasons. Like, I always talk about this where it's like, I was like a 13-year-old boy who like hated Internal Affairs. Like, yeah, you got to let the cops do their job. It's like, no child should have an opinion on Internal Affairs. But the media I was consuming was just like, and so watching Starship Troopers now, like with the lens of that, it's really funny because I've seen this argument played. Before we get into Brothers, having a super extended conversation about a movie is almost an homage to growing up with Brothers anyway. Like,
yeah. Well, I think I've told you this before, but watching or listening to you guys on Action Boys talk about these movies, it's like I'm back in my basement with my brothers, except it's just like 100 times funnier. So that's
yeah. Mission accomplished. We're funnier than the Siegel brothers.
Yeah.
But people say that Starship Troopers is obviously, satire, but also some people would say it's an in-world propaganda film. Like, it's pulled from the world of Starship Troopers and presented as a straight-up propaganda movie. And if you look at it from that lens, it's like, it's interesting. I mean, it doesn't take away from Verhoeven's POV in any way. It still kind of expresses the same anti-fascist views, but it just... does it in a way that's even wildly like even of a like a different an angle I can't even really articulate any further than I just did.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically hyper fascist as a way to be anti-fascist, which is I could see why 14-year-old Alan Siegel in suburban Boston might like not understand the bugs and all that shit. But yeah
all I cared about was cool guns, bugs exploding, and co-ed shower scene. Like, those are the things that landed on me.
Denise Richards, my hero when I was 15. Yeah.
Total Recall had Sharon Stone, three boobs, and a guy who lived inside of another dude's stomach. Now, with hindsight, you're like, oh, I understand a little bit more about what this movie was trying to say. But at the time, I was just like, titties, sleazy, you know, like I was just into all that shit.
when I interviewed Verhoeven about that movie, I kind of got the courage to ask about the three breasts on the screen. And he went into this long spiel about how it was the inspiration was a medical book that he read in Holland, and it was like I just couldn't grasp what he was saying, and it was like a little too much, but that's him, I guess. So yeah.
It's pretty wild to find someone who's thought about the three boobed lady more than yourself, right? It's like, and the only person is the director of the film. Like,
it's like a one, you know, it's like, right. It's like, cause if you talk to boys, if you talk to men ages, like, I don't know, 30 to 55, and you say Total Recall, that is absolutely the first thing that is brought up. Like it just is. And it's, I don't know, guys are disgusting.
It is such iconic imagery at this point that it probably crosses gender and age lines. I feel like it's probably the strongest visual from the movie. If I had to rattle off strong visuals from the movie, it's that, it's Quato, it's two weeks, as his head opens up. And like, I'm not sure what else. Maybe the cab driver. That's not even as iconic as the rest. But
So I'm going to add the like, oddly, like that X-ray thing that like actually looks futuristic that he walks through. And
the itchy and scratchy X-ray machine.
Yeah, exactly. They're kind of like, and then Arnold's like head blowing up, or like
when he gets in the dream sequence
in the Mars.
Oh yeah, Totally. Yeah, that's a good one too. So here, I'm going to tie it, connect it between movies and brothers. One time, my brother, 2.5 years younger than me, a thing we used to do out of boredom in a pre-internet, pre-phone age was sleep on each other's floors so that we could talk. Because we grew up sharing a room, and once we didn't have a room anymore, every once in a while we would sleep on each other's floor to have conversations, to chat before dad got home from work or after dad got home from work and we were still awake. And one time, me and my brother, he slept on my floor, and we did word for word Cable Guy. We even were like, no, we forgot. We were like, we forgot the fucking Scrabble scene or whatever. We forgot the category scene. And we went back, and like, now I couldn't even fucking remember shit. And I just read the novelization recently for some stupid reason. But I remember just doing that and being like, this is so normal. And now, like, looking back on that, it's like, that's like, it's a very weird behavior, but it was like a proto podcast. We were just like literally just talking for as long as we possibly could about Cable Guy.
So this is crazy because we all had our own rooms. We were lucky. But my youngest brother would like to sleep in my room all the time. Like he was 4 years younger. So he would come in. And again, like we were like when you're 16 and 12 or 12 and 8, like that's a pretty big gap. So we weren't quite bonding that closely over like movie lines, but I will say, and actually I have a question for you. This is going to lead into a question, but my grandmother, when I was probably 7 or 8, bought us the VHS of Major League, which was completely inappropriate movie to buy kids because the box has a baseball on it.
That's the most grandma shit ever. I know you like baseball, Alan. Here's a fucking porno featuring Mike Piazza or whatever.
So that was the first like nudity that we saw in a movie for sure. But we watched that movie like 400 times. It's probably the movie I've seen the most in my life. And I'm curious, like, what was the movie for you guys that you watched the most? Could you even name it?
For the three of us, it's probably Hot Shots.
Okay.
And we've watched Hot Shots together and separately hundreds of times. And specifically together, one of the ways we've watched it multiple times where we're standing in front of the TV next to the VCR or DVD player later in life, rewinding and jumping back and going, no, you talked over it. And like jump and like watching jokes over and over again, predicting them and being like, Jason, if you're going to fucking say that, jump back. It's like, all right, wash out, dead meat. It's like, no, go back. I want to hear it. Like Hot Shots, that movie fucking, my middle brother is a closer in age. The youngest one is like too much younger for us to have bonded when he was just our straight up like pet, like our guinea pig, our like,
yeah, right.
We were just home alone. We'd be like 13, 10 and 4. And we'd be like, all right, all right, brother, here's what you're doing today. You're pissing on the dog and you have no choice. Like, we're going to kick your ass if we don't get to watch you urinate on the dog. And it's like, my mom's like, what did you guys do today?
So we used to make my youngest brother, Brian, it's almost cruel in hindsight. We'd be like, hey, see that little Fisher Price car, you know, like that, those red, like plastic
with the
like,
yellow like, roof and the,
yeah, like steer, the cozy, yeah. I think it was called the cozy coupe. But like, hey, go off that jump right there. Go try the jump. Like you go first off the jump. And he would do it. And he would be like tears streaming down his face. And we're like, okay, we're not going to do the jump because he was the guinea pig. And you know, he got his revenge because he's the tallest of the three of us and the best athlete. And
hell yeah,
best SAT scores and the best looking. So he earned that, and it's crazy. Yeah,
it's even just a victory once you're 40 to be the youngest brother. Like you don't even have to be the best looking, most successful. Just my brother being 6 years younger than me is like, you have no idea, man. It gets so much worse.
He doesn't know what's coming yet. Yeah,
Major League is a great one. Because it's also kind of all over the place referentially. So you can get yourself into a spot where you're like weirdly learning about a lot of stuff. You know, you're like, why do I have so many like offensive Haitian jokes on tap? And it's like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have grown up watching Pedro Serrano miss curveballs. But that movie is wildly, is so, so perfect. The Action Boys, we watched that on our retreat and it was just like, that movie is pure nostalgia. Like casting, like the fact that it's about baseball makes it feel like a pastime already. And those sports movies that were funny were like, a weird way in, because you're like, Mom, I'm watching a sports movie. And then it doesn't feel as like weird as when you're watching Cable Guy or Dumb and Dumber or Term or anything with like violence. You know, you're like, oh, just a sports movie, Mom. Yes, it features my favorite line of my favorite joke of the whole movie is, I feel like a fucking banker in this.
Yeah, with the sleeveless, sleeveless jacket. Yeah,
Vaughn is in like a tie with a sleeveless leather jacket. Yeah. I feel like a fucking banker in this.
I think that's the scene where he says to Berenger, he's like, "You want me to drag him out back, kick the shit out of him?" He sees, it's Rene Russo's boyfriend. Yeah. Anyway, it's for an audience of two, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, I please. This is pretty much the premise of the podcast.
An audience of two with John Gabers.
Right. Yeah, right. It's me and the guest. If other people listen, fine. But I'm here to just hear more about. Now, we're similar in age. So what was your like? I had the weird another layer that I didn't realize that was different for me than a lot of other people. As I got older, a lot of people's of my parents' generation had a stay at home mom. I had a working mom, but also specifically my parents worked weekends, which not a lot of parents did of my friend group. So I had like, we had this like weird thing where it'd be like a Saturday and it'd be like the lap was like my dad had to leave for work at like 1-ish and my mom got home from work at like 7-ish. So we would constantly have like these gaps, like where we'd be like, all right, we're just alone, the three of us, like full access to the house, full access. That's how come we end up watching so much shit that we shouldn't have watched. Like there was probably one part full blown feral like children move, and then probably in hindsight with some adult experience, probably a little bit of guilt on my parents' behalf where they're like, yeah, watch whatever you want, that's gonna keep you guys safely in the living room for 2 hours, then yeah, put on whatever the fuck you guys want, rent whatever you want from Blockbuster, like rent whatever you want from Palmer Video, you'll be okay.
So my dad was an engineer and my mom was a stay-at-home mom for a while, and then she went back to work when I was probably in middle school. She's an art teacher. So it was like pretty traditional in terms of like when they were home. My parents would go out on Saturday nights and we had this babysitter who would like go out and meet his friend outside for a little while and be like, what is he doing? And then he'd come back smelling like cologne and be like, what is going on with Kevin? And it's like, oh, we finally got it. But we would. So
I wouldn't have connected that until like this conversation. You're like a brighter guy than I. I'd be like, oh, fuck, he was smoking weed or cigs or, you know.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. He came back smelling like cool water cologne. So it's like, you know, it's like.
Oh, dude, I fucking drank cool water cologne in junior high because it was blue and someone dared me. And I was like, I think all blue stuff tastes good. And I drank someone's cool water. Cool water was the coolest fucking cologne for so long.
And it was that and Drakkar Noir, I think. Was
yes.
That.
Yeah, yeah. But cool water didn't have as many TV ads, so you were confused. And then by the time junior high came around, the sort of wealthier kind of like cool kids, they were all wearing cool water. And I just asked for it for like my Christmas and my birthday, like every fucking year.
So when I was in middle school, my dad finished our basement and
I had a finished basement starting in sixth grade when we moved towns. Yeah.
So the carpet was the grossest surface on the face of the earth. So it would flood every year.
Oh.
Like, I don't know. My dad like didn't figure out the sump pump or something. And so we would be down there and we would be playing first, you know, Nintendo, Genesis, and then PlayStation. But it was like, I think you once described your basement as like a fart box, and that's basically what it was. It was like, okay, so you have brothers, so we have to, so we have to talk about this. So was farting also like a sport in your family, or is that just my family?
everyone else played safety and doorknob outside of our house. We didn't play it in our house though.
How did you know to bring that up? I was going to tell a story about that game, but you go first. Yeah. Okay.
Well,
yeah.
We never did. Safety and doorknob was like a thing amongst friends, but we kind of removed that from. And I think that's the age difference thing, too, because like if I called doorknob on like my brother, I'd like could break his bicep or whatever. But farting was like you say sport. I would say for us, it was weirdly like, yes, if it was a sport, it was like gymnastics. It was like the floor routine. It would be like. All right, I'm going to, like, set up, hey, whoa, whoa, and then, like, let one rip or fart. A big thing was, because my dad also did this to us too, because he was like, farts were funny to him too. He would get you in a way that made you closer to his fart by accident. He'd be like, oh, Johnny, is this yours on the ground here? And I'd like bend down to look, and he'd walk by and like fart on my side or whatever. So there was a lot of like traps and then also performative farting, but none of the safety and doorknob shit. We were weirdly, and like, not to be too frank, I think because my dad hit us, we didn't hit each other that much. Like, we were just like, but we would fight every once in a while, but it was always, we got mad at each other all the time, and we would get physical, but we never really like swung on each other. The age and size difference was always a lot. And also like we weirdly, as we got older, like gained this power where it was like the three of us versus our parents. Like we realized the infighting. For, I know you asked about farting, and now I'm like, my dad was abusive, but
keep going.
But like, it used to be, because of three boys, and maybe you can relate to this, the alliances would shift constantly. It would be like me and Justin versus Jason, Jason and Justin versus me and Jason versus Justin. It was always like 2v1 constantly, never every man for himself, always 2v1. And then at some certain age, we were like, with all the alone time we had, I guess like what I'm describing is brotherhood or camaraderie. We decided that it was like, hey, they're crazy. They're annoying. We're having the time. Like, why are we fighting with each other when they suck? And like, nothing bonds people like a common enemy, especially if they're your parents.
Yeah. I mean, so I'm, my fiance is an only child. And she says one of the things that's tough is you don't have anybody to have a sanity check with. So like my brothers, as we've gotten older, like if we've had issues with family, like we can go to each other and talk about it. But and back to farting for a second. So the safety doorknob story that I have is to enlighten listeners who didn't grow up with shithead brothers. So safety doorknob is if you fart, you're supposed to say safety. But if you don't say safety, someone could say doorknob. And then if you, the farter, don't touch a doorknob, they can hit you until you touch the doorknob. So we learned this game at camp, at summer camp, and we would play it at home. And one time I had a friend over, a new friend, and I was like trying to, you know, act cool in front of him. And my dad had picked up on the safety doorknob game, and my dad farted, and he just goes, doorknob. So he got the game wrong. He didn't understand it. Like, so, and I was so embarrassed that he ripped one, that it was and the last thing I'll say is, you get older and you realize there are two types of families, ones who acknowledge every fart and ones that acknowledge none. And I think that that's like a thing in life that I've learned. So it's wisdom for me.
Yeah, I will sell out my mom here. When she would fart, she would like make herself giggle so fucking hard. She would try. She was the only one that didn't performatively fart. But she like couldn't help herself when she would fart. It was still just so fun, and we would just be like, mom, and she would just be like tears. My mom, hell of an audience. She laughs really hard. She's, both of my parents are funny, and my mom really laughs a lot, and she can laugh at herself the most, which is, I think, my superpower I got from her. I got a lot of negative stuff, as my therapist has been telling me, but I also got this power to really laugh at myself. So she was always like that. And so all of us, and I have now like this retroactive sympathy for my mom. She just like, and your mom just lived with four boys, four men, four, one man, three boys, however you want to break it down. That's just like, that's a lot to be surrounded by.
So my mom taught in an all girls Catholic school, and we're Jewish, and the hardest thing for her to adjust to was that it was all girls. She just was not used to girls. The only female in our house was the dog. So it broke her brain a little bit. And she'll tell you that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's a huge gear shift, right? Like if you're just used to like the energy of young boys versus, and now as we get older, I mean, as society moves on, there's a lot more parallels we notice between all kids. But back then it was so delineated. I mean, an all girls school by definition is like, you know, and that's really funny for, that's really funny for her, because that's a real, like, I'm trying to say, like, it's like working at a nature preserve during the day and then going to like a room with three Dobermans in it at night. Like, it's just like,
I mean, like he's the
same species, just completely different energy. Yeah.
Just total culture shock. Right. And so I'm hijacking this. I was going to ask you one thing. So what's something that like having brothers sort of instilled in you that people think is freakish in your life? Because I've had a couple of these things. I don't know if you can think of anything like that you learned, you know, naturally growing up that you didn't realize like really either doesn't have to mess with you, but like change something in you that maybe made you different than other people.
Ooh, I like this conversation topic. You tell me one while I'll fucking think on this, but yeah, there's gotta be something.
So the number one thing for me is I've had multiple people in my life, usually women, tell me that I eat freakishly fast.
Okay.
And I think the answer, it's so obvious because if I didn't reach for the food as a kid, it was gone. There were no leftovers. You know, when you have two brothers and we're so close in age, it was like we were always just like fighting for that last scrap. And so I still, to this day, it is a struggle for me, especially at a restaurant when like, you know, that's you're there to eat. So, you don't want to like,
giddy. Yeah.
You don't want to ruin it, but it's to a point where I've had, it's like those, you know, I need one of those bowls that the dogs have to not eat too fast. It has like a little maze in it.
Put my Irv's burger in a fucking, like wrap it in a towel. So I have to, like, keeps me busy for an hour. dude, that is so fucking realistic. And, it would be like, we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So we ate like kind of like not great, but every once in a while we'd have like fun stuff. And that's when it would be turned on. Like no one would be like reaching for a second round of frozen string beans steamed or whatever. But like if my dad made hot dogs one night or we were having raviolis or something fucking rad like that, then it would become a little bit of like, and you weren't allowed to, in my house, you weren't allowed to have seconds of anything unless you ate everything first. Like, so you couldn't get more ravioli if you still had vegetables. So I would say the one power I have, which is the positive thing I've got, is I could fucking eat anything. And I think I've talked about this countless times, but another thing is like the snack cabinet. Your mom's like, there are fruit snacks in there. And you're like, if I don't eat them all today, I might not get any, or I might not get as many as I want. So like we would like plow through boxes of eventually snacks just kind of went to like, we pretty much had like horse feed in our house. It was just like the driest pretzels, Cheez-Its. Like all we had was like whatever was like bulk and on sale, because we would just go like huge box of white cheddar Cheez-Its gone in one sitting. And if two of the brothers finished it and the third one wasn't there, in fury, you know, like absolute drama of like, you guys finished all the fucking white cheddar Cheez-Its? I didn't have any. That's so fucked up. You know, like, and then the next day, me and my other brother would finish it and, you know, fuck over the third. Like it was constantly. Like, and there was some level of it that was like, I might not get to have this tomorrow if I don't eat as much as I can today, which is scarcity mindset meets, you know, like inter-family competition. But it was, I am a fucking gavone. I can eat like a fucking champion. I can just fucking eat so fast, so much. And I can eat stuff I don't like by the fucking gallon, which is like repulsive of me. I'd be like, I'm not even enjoying this thing and I can have 7,000 calories of it. Because I like, that's just a skill set I got because I wanted seconds of the bagged fettuccine that we're eating. Like, those fucking like bag, like Lipton noodle bags and like rice bags, that was like a go-to side like 5 nights a week growing up. So like if you wanted more of the cool noodles, you had to eat more of your chicken and your fucking beans or whatever. And it was like, you know, I just want a fucking tray of cheese, you know.
My parents were also they're like, rules for what we could eat were so strange. It was like no sugary cereals. But we're going to buy 6 boxes of Pepperidge Farm cookies and they would be gone in like 2 seconds. It was a very odd, I mean, the kind of shit that our generation ate as kids that was purportedly healthy. Like, do you remember bagels were health food as kids? Like, oh, it's better than donuts. You know, it's like,
yeah,
calories for bagel and cream cheese. It's like, that's not good for you, but
our school served. I ate a bagel and cream cheese at high school, like almost every day for lunch with Doritos and it's like, and a chocolate milk. Like I was just fucking, The damage, the long-term damage I did to myself as a child, like, is just fucking insane. I mean, even separating it from the sort of behavior building I did, just like purely like, but separate of that, just the actual toxins I put in my body are just sugary cereal's really funny. We were never allowed to have sugary cereal either, but we were never allowed to have, I guess I should say, name brand cereal.
I see. Yeah.
If it was a big bag of fucking like Pathmark marshmallow letters or whatever, like the alpha, the knockoff alphabets, we would have like a big, a friend came over one time and like laughed at us for having bagged cereal. And me and my brother were like humiliated. We had no idea it was like that corny to have a bag of cereal. We were like so upset. Like we were like, Mom, we want Cinnamon Toast Crunch. Like, and like, and of course my parents would be like, all right, $4.79 for a box of Cinnamon Toast Crunch. First morning we have it. Each of us have two bowls. It's gone. It's like, she's like, I'm not buying fucking Cinnamon Toast Crunch anymore. Like, fair, fair.
I feel like having brothers and having siblings that close. So I just, one thing that I've realized, it never felt like anything was really yours. You know, you had to share everything, even toys, even, you know, we would get Nintendo with three of us. Like, there was always somebody sitting out. So it was always,
there
was always a fight over something. Yeah.
Bro, we had luckily the youngest was far enough away that for about 2 years, 18 months, he got a lot of fun of holding an unplugged controller, like not realizing he wasn't playing, you know, like, oh, Jay, you're killing it. And he'd just be like, having like like he would have like an 8-bit Nintendo controller and we'd be playing Super Nintendo. And like, I'd just be like, yo, whoa, Jay, that was you that did that. And he's like, oh, I'd be like, dude, go grab us more Cheez-Its. We'll time you. I don't want to. It's like, dude, can you beat your own record? He's like, all right, be right back. And then like, we would eat like fruit snacks. And if he wanted some, we would tell him he couldn't have it because it was like medicine or vitamins. It was like a big lie we would say all the time. Cause we all took like Flintstones chewables. Like that was one positive habit my parents put us all in. And it was like, we took vitamins every day, but when we would be like, oh, these are vitamins. You can't have these. And it would be like, you're eating like fucking street shark, like gummy sharks saying we can't, they're vitamins. It was fucking great.
It was always funny watching our youngest brother sort of try to imitate us. And I remember once, because I used to put my chocolate chip cookies in the microwave to like make them warmer. And my little brother, when he was like 4 or 5, put it in for 4 minutes and it lit the napkin on fire. So I'm glad we're all, you know, alive after that.
Dude, the amount of shit we did where like, we like, oh, like break a lamp and then like tell our parents it was the youngest brother, even though like he's like of an age where he can't even like articulate his own defense. And we'd be like, that was Jason who did that. And like, I'd be like, and because he just wouldn't get yelled at at four like we would. So we'd be like, you have to just take it, dude. You have to, please. Also, are you wearing a Predator t-shirt currently?
I am, yeah. Arnold. Hell yeah. It says The Hunt or something on the back. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, I'm pandering. Oh, okay?
Fuck, yeah.
So did having brothers also sort of fuck with your conception of what privacy is? Because for me,
I'll tell you what, that is a perfect call. Having brothers and playing sports in the 80s and 90s have absolutely changed like my, like, dude, I've told the story before, but my mom one time walked into our bathroom. We had like my mom in our second house. My mom and dad lived upstairs and we had like the middle floor, and she walked in. She heard us all like laughing and talking, couldn't find us, opens the bathroom door, and one of us is pissing in the toilet. One of us is pissing in the tub, and the third is pissing in the sink. The tub piss was a given. The amount of times one of us pissed in the tub while the other one was shitting on the bowl is like, is over 100 times. Cause like, it's just too many bodies for one bathroom with like school schedules and before dinner stuff. So like, my brother would be shitting and I'd be like, I gotta go. He's like, all right, get in the shower. And so you'd get in the shower, close the curtain because we wanted some privacy, and then just piss. Then it eventually just kind of became like, pissing in the toilet at the same time was a big thing. Pissing in the toilet and the bathtub at the same time. And then the peak one was when my brother walked in. I came in last and still had to go. And I hit the fucking sink because I was the tallest. And my mom just opens the door. And also, this bathroom, by the way, has like a huge medicine cabinet that is mirrored. So like my mom walks in and sees the reflection of three of her son's peckers as we're all just pissing in various drains in the house. And it's like, that shit is like something you walk in on like apes doing in an exhibit, like at like the zoo.
Oh, for sure. I mean, so we had my brother had a friend over once and the friend's mom came to pick up the child at our house and she's pulling into the driveway and there is my brother peeing in the driveway like a parabolic stream, like up and down, like, and this woman is driving. It's like I thought the seagulls had indoor plumbing. Like, what is going on? And it just like there was no you get in that zone or something, and it's like, wow, there's no rules. Like, I'm just gonna do that, and it's like boys are fucking disgusting.
Yeah. Peeing outside is something that I you know, like, you grow up and then other people don't do it, but then you find like pockets of people who are like grown men, homeowners, you know, arguably millionaires, I know, urinate off their deck onto their lawn, you know, their sons walk out and piss on the patio. Just like my little nephews are like, daddy, can I pee in the yard? And he's like, yeah, okay, go ahead. Like, he has to go in. He's like, go. The kid is in the house, like closer to the bathroom. He's like, I want to pee in the yard. My brother's like, go. Like, just go before your mom comes home. Like, pissing in the yard, pissing in front of people. Also, having like a working, like my mom taking us to the mall, my mom being a woman and having three boys in the mall and us being a touch too old to want to go into the ladies' room with her. The big thing we would do is urinate in the mall parking lot next to the car right when we got there. And my mom would call it, use your handy picnic tool. Which I guess meant because we were boys, we can take our peeps out or we called them birds when we were young. Oh, I saw dad's bird when he was getting out of the shower. I just forgot that we called them birds. Now, I'm recording an Action Boys after this, so when you listen to the episode, when you listen to the Escape from LA episode, I'm going to bring up the birds thing. So just be prepared.
So my youngest brother. This is a good segue, actually. We've talked about we've talked about farting and now peeing. And so when we were in Colonial Williamsburg, when I was
hell
in fifth grade, my youngest brother was in first grade. And he said to my dad, we were like in like one of these reenactments, it was like a harpsichord player or something. And he's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And my dad's like, can you hold it? My brother's like, yeah. And within 5 minutes, he had a big stain in the front of his pants. And so, okay, so this is a segue to something else, which is we talked about that for a good 12 years, 15 years, and it's really scary in a way how like stories will stick with you, especially when you have siblings, because it's always this pressure point to bring up. And again, he was like 5 years old, and I don't know, I had the luxury of being older, so maybe my more embarrassing moments I could kind of hide from them. So yeah.
My youngest brother peed his pants in the mall one time, and it went down and got his socks. Like, it went all the way down his legs that his socks were wet. We called him Yellow Socks for like 10 years. And like, we would bring it up like randomly, like, all right, shut the fuck up, Yellow Socks. Like, 8 years after it happened, and it would hit. I, while drunk on vacation I was like 20. And I said, why is everybody so mad at me? And went to run away. And I tripped over my own underwear and fell into the bathroom. And that is now 20 something years ago. Now, I was way too old to be talking like that and acting like that, but it still comes up. It's still 20 years riding. And that's them finally having vengeance of being like having the developed brain when I do something embarrassed where they could stick with it. Oh, my brother barfed once. Like, anything that happens that is kind of like a family legend just like sticks forever. And then even like randomly, my mom, who has a terrible memory, will remember one of these things. And it's mostly because we have been reminding her of it like every 6 months for a decade. But she'll be like, remember when he puked on, and we had to go to the Gap and buy him all new clothes, and we had to then go to the Broadway show in like weird Gap clothes? I was like, remember when Jonathan got him? My mom, Jonathan, remember when you got the mohawk before we were going to see that Broadway show, and your father was so pissed off? And it's like, oh my God, that's like a family legend. Like, and it's just like, never goes away. And then like, it truly like, it's like oral tradition as I remember learning about it.
Yeah. And half the details are not true. Like we once found my brother when he was maybe five, he was not using soap in the shower. So we called him a scrub. And that was like his nickname for like 12 years. And again, he didn't deserve that. He was fucking 5 years old, but it's something that sticks. And I don't know that it's just having brothers, but maybe it's just close siblings.
Yeah. I think it's also like, that's like friend group shit too. Like you can, it's hard to outbox a nickname. You know what I mean? Like once you got one, it's especially something like scrub in reference to what it is. You know what I mean? Like if it was No Soap Boy, that's not going to hit as hard as scrub will.
No, for sure.
Mom brought this up recently. We were on the phone and she said, you know what we were just talking about the other day, Jonathan? Remember when you and your brother convinced me that I'm leaving names out of this for safety here. You convinced me that your other brother was jerking off with the belt around his neck. Like even hearing my mom say that phrase, I like snotted on the phone laughing. Me and my brother convinced my mom, and she went and had to talk to him about it. And like, that was our goal. Our goal was to get her to go, can I talk to you for a second about safety? Like,
oh my God.
So my brother had to have a sit down with my mom and talk about how dangerous it is to choke yourself with a belt in the closet while masturbating. And it's like, and we were talking about this recently and we were trying to remember when it was. And me and my brother were like 15 and 12. So we shouldn't have even like really known that much about this. like it was great because of the movies you were watching. You like you know, if you watch Rising Sun, you know what a gasper is, you know. And the next thing you know, you're like talking about autoerotic asphyxiation as a freshman in high school with your mom. That was one of the best fucking. We also one time told her that my dad molested my brother and like tried to get her to believe it. And that one was like fucked up. Like that one I feel uncomfortable like copping to. But while I'm being funny about it, I should also say some of the fucked up shit I did.
I mean, okay, I never had that moments like that. But I will say that this is like super embarrassing. But I went to see the movie Wild Things, and the first time my best friend and I went to see it, we got kicked out because they clearly were like watching, you know, like if for people are under 18. But the second time, my mom bought us the tickets and sat in another area of the theater. Now that movie, if you watch it now, is less. It's a little less risque than like we thought at 15 years old.
But, oh yeah, but, I mean, it's like it pales in comparison to like a Euphoria episode. But it, like,
and
at the time, that shit was like the first threesome I even heard about was on Wild.
I cannot even believe that like I thought that was a good idea. That my mom thought it was a good idea. That it was insane. I mean, this is actually something I was going to bring up too. Is just the idea of being parents of three teenage boys is just insane. Like, how did we? And we were like pretty goody two shoes. Like, we were goody two shoes. But like, how did we all? I bet both of us could tell 10 how did nobody die stories. Now
I got 10 how did nobody die stories. 10 like 400 stories like tangentially related to cum. You know what I mean? Like. One time, my mom thought she bagged me smoking weed because she was like, I can smell it in here. And we were like, I was like, I'm not smoking weed, mom. She's like, it smells like pot in here. I'll find it. Don't you worry. I'll find it. And she starts like going through my trash, which is filled with balled up tissues. And she's like, oh, this is probably your little, this is where you hide your pot. This is where you throw your pot out. Picks up a balled up tissue and is holding it in her hand. And I'm going like, put that down. And then she thinks she's like getting closer to the case of solving the case because I'm so visibly panicked about this. And I'm like,
oh God,
I'm not panicked that you're about to find cannabis, mom. I'm panicked that you're about to get the fucking snail trail on your hand. So I'm like screaming and I'm like, no, put that down. She's like, what? You worried? And like about to like go fucking like, I can smell that. And I was like, eventually had to like, come clean and be like, come pun intended, and be like, mom,
no pun intended.
Mom, no, it's from jerking off. And it's like, having to even say that to your mom. And she's like, then she's like, ew, you're disgusting. And I'm like, you're pulling tissues out of my garbage. It's either boogers or cum. Like, my mom was a nurse as well. So my mom not understanding all this like biology shit is like even extra fucking humiliating. But I think that's like, unfortunately, like Catholicism and that generation of my mom being like, wait, what do you mean? My boys are just coming on the rug and then rubbing it in with their fucking sneaker. That was like, that was my maybe most disgusting habit, would be jerking off on the couch and like rolling over and just pushing it onto the carpet.
I mean, you know, trust me, I'm no stranger to guilt in my family either. But well, I just have this vivid memory of when I was in sixth grade, a kid in the neighborhood had, God, this is embarrassing, had Hustler trading cards. I don't know if you remember Hustler trading cards. It was a real thing that kids would shoplift from the local comic book store.
Shoplifting pogs was our big thing.
Yes. And I remember having these trading cards that I eventually felt so guilty about that I buried them in the backyard.
Oh my
and they're
God.
Probably and they're probably still there. So
I'm currently looking for my Hustler trading cards. I bought a bunch of weird trading cards. I might have given them to the Action Boys as a gift. But let me just, while I have these out, let me just show you some recent. Here's one: Demolition Man trading cards. Here's my favorite: terrorist attack trading cards. Educational.
Did you have any OJ Pogs?
Yes, I had the Guilty Not Guilty Slammer.
Yeah. So did we. Yes, we bought them at Al Sports Cards. And
Dave's Cards was the name of our place on Newbridge Road. And at Dave was old, and if one person distracted him, someone else could fill their pockets. You know, like. So we would like rob Dave all the time.
the son of the Al Sports Cards owner would every year on Halloween go as a comic book, but it was really just a sandwich board that had Al Sports Cards on it. So it was a giant advertisement for his dad's shop. So it was, yeah. What a weird time.
What's your relationship with your brothers like now as grownups?
It's close. We talk a lot. We probably talk every week. We, you know, some of the dynamics are still there, I would say, but mostly we've outgrown a lot of the tension. It's hard to fully outgrow that. One of my brothers has kids. Another does not. So
same.
Yeah.
My brothers has two kids. The other one is still very young. And we actually, me and him have the most in common. We're more similar. As we've learned now that he's like fully developed in his 30s, we're pretty similar compared to the middle one. Do you have a running text thread with the two of them?
Not together. That's really funny. We have like a WhatsApp conversation sometimes, but it's not so we sort of do parallel texts. But one funny thing is my brother has two girls with a third girl on the way. So it's sort of like a God has a sense of humor type situation.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, weirdly enough, my brother's kids are 2 years, 9 months apart, which is what him and I are apart.
Wow.
And he has two boys, and one, the older one, is like loud, big, brunette, and flamboyant. And the middle, his younger one, is a towhead who's kind of devilish, which is exactly our dynamic growing up, which is fucking crazy. Like, it's really funny how his kids are so similar to him and I. And his wife, my sister-in-law, was an only child. And when they were having the second kid about 2.5 years after the first one, and the same, I was like, yo, that's the same age gap as us. I'm like, does my sister-in-law name removed here? Did she have any idea what she's in for? And he's like, no. And he's like, I'm afraid to like tell her yet. I'm like holding off. And now they're like 6 and 4, and it's like, okay, I think I know what I'm in for. It's going to be great. I'm like, wait till 13 and 11, 17 and 15. These are fucking crazy.
Yeah. I think of these stories. I wrote down some stuff. And again, I read these notes that I have to myself. I'm like, how did we survive? I mean, I don't know if you want to hear one of these stories.
Let's Siegel please.
Family legend. So I'm curious if this is a Gaber's version. So when I was finished my freshman year of college, I was home. and my brother went to a party, and he was responsible. He was in high school. He stayed over at this party, and he calls me the next morning. He had, you know, drank at the party. He was, you know, 18. And he said, "Alan, did you take my car last night?" And I said, "No." And unbeknownst to us, his two shithead kids had taken his keys, and they were going to pull a prank on him by driving the car and parking it in my parents' driveway to like Ethan would wake up my brother and be like, "Where's the car?" and find out it was in my parents' driveway. So these two kids were both probably, and I preface this by saying nobody got hurt. So they're driving in, and they're driving like 90 miles an hour, very fast, because like one of them didn't have a license. They're in my brother's car. They hit a curb. They flip the car over. And my dad hears this, runs outside, and sees two kids squirming out of this car. My brother's nowhere to be found. And they ran off to a golf course, and the cops eventually tracked them down. But again, this became legend. And so I have the news story from the local newspaper, if you want me to read the...
Yes. This is fucking awesome. A flipped car where people survived is like one of the best.
Yes. And again, my brother was just at this party and had no idea. So two local youths were cited by police after they took a friend's car for a ride and went off the road Saturday at 7 a.m. The car overturned onto its roof, and the youths, who were uninjured, ran from the scene. The boys were caught by patrolman Charles Peabody and Lynn Lilly of the Public Works Department on the golf course, the Colonial Golf Course. According to police, the 1995 Toyota Corolla was owned by the boy's father. Police said the youths were spending all night at another friend's house, and they took the car keys while their friend slept. And again, how did nobody die? I don't know, but that's childhood right there. So
that's so rad. This is not at all similar and not a nobody died situation, but this is the story that your story triggered. In our 20s, I'm home. Maybe it's a summer. I'm home from college. Me and my brother, this is when my closer brother in age, this is when we really started bonding more, was once I went away to college. Like, living all at home was like a little much for all of us. We were in each other's way as we were growing up, and yeah, we had a lot of different tastes. But then me going away to school kind of freed up my middle brother, who is probably the alpha of the family, even though he's the middle one. He's my dad reincarnated. I'm pretty similar to my mom, but he's like exactly, I look just like my mom at least too. We always joke, cause my mom's Italian, that I look just like her, except she has less of a beard. And she doesn't love that. My brother and I would like not hang out with each other all the time, but like, if we had, you know, we'd be texting and be like, "I'm out drunk here." He's like, "Oh, I'm out drunk here with Melissa. She'll come grab you and bring us home." And so I was like, "Oh, sick." Like, so him and his girlfriend or a friend, Melissa, would come grab me. We'd be like, "Oh, we got to stop at the bodega and get, or the deli." We didn't know bodega, the word bodega, yet until I moved to Brooklyn. And we were like, "We got to go to the deli and get snacks." So we got like these Jamaican beef patties and 40s. And we were like, 20 and 17. And we got a bunch of Jamaican beef patties in 40s. And she drops us off in front of the house. And we're like being super rowdy outside. And she's like, "Quiet, your parents are going to hear." We're kind of like a little out past curfew. And I'm like so drunk and like feeling super powerful. I'm like, we're standing like right in front of my house. And I'm like, "Fuck dad." And my brother's like, "Fuck dad." And I punched the hood of his car, his Chevy Cavalier, is like 91 Chevy Cavalier, and it has an alarm, and I don't know this, and I punched the hood of my dad's car, and his alarm starts going off, and we're fucking hammered, holding all these like beef patties and 40s. We're like, "We have to get inside and click the button." And so we go inside, and we're trying to open the door with our keys. The way my parents' layout of the house is that you open the front door to their house, and straight in front of you is staircase up to my parents' bedroom, bathroom, and like my mom and the office. And we're going to open the door, and the door slams shut and then reopens, and it's my father. And listeners of the pod or friends of the pod would know my dad slept nude. And he just rips the door open, 6'5", completely naked, thinking his car is getting stolen. what the fuck am I doing? You know, or someone was breaking into the house, and it's us, and we're like laughing, holding 40s. He knows we set the car alarm off. Like, we're the only people around for miles. So we say we slammed Melissa's car door too close to his car, and it must have, like, knocked. And we were like, and he just... This is one of the big things I talk about this a lot in therapy, and try to talk about it in stand-up too, is these memories wash over me of just me looking my parents in the eye and just lying. Just going, I don't know. I don't know what the teacher is talking about. And thinking back, being like, now that I'm a grown-up and my friends has like a 12-year-old kid, and a 12-year-old comes by and I'm like, that kid's lying. And he's like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, it's so obvious to tell when a kid is lying. And I'm screaming in my mom's face, why don't you believe me? Like, hysterical crying. And I'm like, I'm fucking lying. And now I get, that's the kind of thing that when I'm in the shower, I get like, when I think about that, I get like a chill of like, ah, what a piece of shit.
Well, I've asked this question to friends. It's like, how do you get to a point where your kids don't lie to you? Like, is that just natural in your like monkey brain when you're a teenager that you have to be, I don't know, oppositional to your parents? It's scary in a way. Like, I think about it myself. Yeah.
It's for us, it was enormous. And like, this is where the therapy part comes in. I am so averse to getting in trouble because of like how strict my parents were growing up, mm-hmm. that like getting in trouble is still like the worst thing that can happen to me. And I'm 41 and live my own life, and I'm still like, well, I can't handle getting in trouble. And getting in trouble might just mean like my wife is upset with me about something, or like, oh, I think my coworker or a colleague or my agent, you know, so I'm so afraid of getting in trouble. It came from that. So it was like anything you could do to just like maybe not get in trouble, or maybe just delay by one day. Like, I'm calling the teacher tomorrow. I'm like, go ahead, she can tell you. And then like the next morning you're like, the teacher told us the truth. You're like, yeah, I should have known that was going to happen. Like,
it's a hard thing to learn that the truth usually is easier than the lie. Like, it might get you yelled at for 5 seconds, but the long game is usually tougher when you're 14 and trying to hide your report card or whatever.
Yeah, oh God. Oh, we used to do shit like, oh, weird. The mailman must have like accidentally shredded the report card and still put it in the mailbox. Like, you know, like race home before your mom and like crinkle it and like rip up like parts where the grades were, and to be like, you know, I can call the school and just ask her.
So when you hang out with your brothers now, I guess in front of your significant others, do they ever get lost? Because like one of my sisters-in-law, she pointed out, she's like, you guys have like a shorthand that I just can't keep up with. And it is absolutely baffling to her. And I wouldn't even think of it. It's like, yeah, it's just really, it's funny. Yeah.
The big thing my wife learned from us was for her first few times hanging out with us when we were just boyfriend and girlfriend, my whole family would be busting each other's balls. Me and my brothers would be really, like, really mean to each other. And she would like jump in when they were piling on me, be like, yeah, and he fucking that, that, that. And then all three of us would turn on her immediately and be like, oh, who the fuck do you think you are? And start like roasting her and like lighting her up. And she was like, you guys are fucking crazy. You're so mean to each other. The second a fourth person tries to do anything, all three of you get your fucking hackles up and come for them. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I think you're describing what Long Islanders would call brotherhood.
Well, New England's like a distant, or maybe a not so distant cousin to that. I mean,
no, it's right there. It's right there. We're cousins via our aunt, Connecticut.
Do you remember what age like you started covering for your siblings? Like, I was thinking about that. I think it took a while because
you start as a rat for a long time.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because
yeah.
You are like, if they're getting in trouble, I'm not, and like that's all that matters. Like, and it's like, you're like every man for himself. And then eventually you just get a little bit. And I think, like I was saying earlier, it's like when we realized like there's strength in numbers, let's just be on the same team. And then that's when we start covering for each other and like being sketchy and like, you know, like knowing my brother's sneaking out and just looking my mom in the eyes and go, I think he's in there. You know, like he was home all night. Where'd your brother go last night? He was home all night. I saw him at 2 a.m. go to the bathroom. No, you didn't. Like, we caught him out. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, just instantly, like, ready to lie at the drop of a hat and to protect each other. It's really funny. But if I would, any one of us would sell any of the other ones out for something that was funny or like roasted one of the other people.
Right. Anything for the joke. I mean, so when I was, in college, my parents went away to Mexico for my mom's 50th birthday. And I had really small get together, maybe, I don't know, 5 or 6 or 7 kids like my age. And one of my brothers went to a high school party. And again, he didn't drive. So I was like, whatever. I was the older brother. I was in charge. And so he comes home and he's drunk. And we're in the basement, you know, the fart box. We're down there like having a couple of beers, like something very, very, very casual. And he like sprints down the stairs, trips, falls, goes Superman into the wall. No joke. Head through the drywall, like between two
beams, studs,
joists. Yeah. Like a perfectly circular hole. So I'm like, oh my God, like he could have hit his head in the wood. And so we like stand him up and I like feel around. There's like no bumps. He doesn't have a concussion. So I put a sign on the wall. Like I took him to bed and I was like, you're in deep shit. I wrote this on the sign and he comes down and he sees the sign. And he says to me, then he's like, Alan, what did I do? And I was like, yeah, you better get that fixed. So he took, again, you know, we're from north of Boston. So he took his friend whose dad was a contractor, an Italian guy, and to Home Depot. and he brought a piece of the wall with him to match the paint color. And my brother went up to a guy at Home Depot, was like, I have a hole in my wall I need to fix. And the guy said, how big is the hole? And my brother put his hands around his head and he goes, about this big. And so they got a drywall patching kit and they got paint and they fixed it. And to this day, my parents don't know about it.
Oh, and that's so fucking awesome.
And they sold their house about 5 or 6 years ago. No one knows about it. And unless they listen to this podcast, so that is
awesome.
Yeah. It's my favorite story of my brothers, I would say, because we all sort of had a part in it.
Great. But one time we threw a joint in a planter box in a planter box that was on our deck and it melted through the plastic and caught like some dry leaves on fire. And it ended up getting put out and it wasn't like a big deal, but it was so, and my mom goes, she had some friend over who smoked. She was like, it's probably Trisha's. And me and my brother were like, yes, it was. And like to date, my mom has like beef with this woman for like throwing her cigarette. We were like, we just let this woman rot. We were like, fuck her. She's toast. She shouldn't have done it. You're right, mom. Like that was so rude. And we're like, yeah, I got away with it.
Yeah. I mean, I remember like there are friends that my parents still think like I was doing drugs with when I was really going to Wendy's. Like I would say I'm going to Wendy's.
Right.
And they thought it was like a code word, but usually it was going to Wendy's. But what they didn't realize was that sometimes I was going with them to buy alcohol with his fake ID. So it was like a little, so like they didn't quite know
Recently, my brother reminded me of a funny moment that a thing we do is whenever I'm back home is like one night that I'm around, I invite my friends over and my brothers invite some of their friends that I have overlap with that like are I'm tight with. And they all come over and we get fucked up and we always play CeeLo, like the dice game. That was huge for us in high school and we're still playing it in our 40s. So we always play CeeLo on that like the back patio table that everyone has with like that kind of like frosted glass and like the like chair, you know, like the most obvious, like I live in the Northeast and I have a yard and my parents are middle class kind of table. We were playing CeeLo out there. My brother, who's like the youngest brother, who's like a music freak. I mean, both of my younger brothers are music freaks, but my youngest brother is a volume. He's like the king of the Bluetooth speaker. He literally has like a barrel Bluetooth speaker that's the size of like a garbage can. And he fucking puts that up. It's cranking some stupid house song, but we're all getting into the beat and we're going like, duh, and we're stomping on the deck and it's like rattling the deck. And my mom is like sleeping in the house. We're just like cranking the music. And she comes downstairs and she's like, guys, shut that music off. So my brother shuts the music off and she's like, you guys got to be careful. You're going to break the deck. And she just, and we're like, whoa. And she's like, really? And then my bro, and we're all kind of quiet. We're all fucked up. And we're all kind of like, oh shit, we fucked up. And my youngest brother just goes, puts his arms up in the air and goes, break the deck. And like turns the music back on, cranks the volume. And we're all going, start chanting, break the deck. Like, and my mom is standing there going, stop. And like all of my friends, no. I'm like 25 at the time. We're like, you know, in my late 20s. And we're all just like bouncing, going, break the deck. My dad is dead at this point. We're like, break the deck, break the deck. And she's just like truly grown ups. And it's just like, I asked for one thing and these guys fucking flip out.
That just made me realize like how loud we were growing up, like how we could like we had a family member who called us the Screaming Seagull Brothers, and it was not a term of endearment. It was like we were like, just we didn't know how to be quiet. And to this day, like, I feel like I can't regulate the tone of my voice sometimes. Like Julie, my fiance, will be like okay, like I have an outdoor voice too, but like I'm just getting too animated, and that's having brothers too.
Dude, it's too fucking real. Man, Alan, I appreciate you coming on and talking to me about all this. This was fucking rad. And I look forward to reading more shit that you do. You know, you're covering topics that seem to be algorithmically designed to hit me in the fucking medulla oblongata. But why don't you tell the shitheads where they can find more stuff and more of your stuff and other things like that? Like where should we send them?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Alan Siegel, L-A, A-L-A-N-S-I-E-G-E-L-L-A. And you can find my work at theringer.com. I write a lot about movies and music and TV and stuff that's right in Gabrus's wheelhouse. So, yeah, I think enjoy.
What was the oral? What was the oral history you sent me that I loved so much? I'm fucking, you know, weed brain right now. I can't.
Oh, it's all right. I would think Terminator 2 is.
Yes, it's the Cameron one, right? Exactly. Yeah, it's the Cameron oral history. Yeah, that's a fucking great start. We'll link to an article of yours in the show notes. So if you're curious, pop open up the show notes right now. Click on Alan's stuff. Check it out. Alan, thank you so much. I want to plug Action Boys, of course. I think we talked about it enough on this pod that it counts as an organic native plug. And of course, 101 Places to Party Before You Die on Max for now. Dig in. Thank you, Zaslav. Thank you, Daddy Zaslav.
Thanks, John. Really,
thank you, brother. Later. Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy, I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now. Somewhere, somehow,
body blow,
someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's right. How you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, 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 bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room in.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dar.
I'm your dad.
Action Boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!